This is Small Business Conversations on PBN, brought to you by Profits Plus Solutions. Increasing your profits plus building your business for the future. We are Profits Plus. You can find us at profitsplus.org. This is Small Business Conversations on PBN, the Profitable Business Network. Now, the host of Small Business Conversations, principal of Profits Plus Solutions, here is Tom Shea.
And good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Small Business Conversations with Tom Shea, brought to you by Profits Plus Solutions, a 16-year running program where we get together on an evening every month and we find a fascinating person who has great knowledge in the area of small business. We twist their arms and beg of them, well, this wasn't a real begging, this guy was very nice to join in, and say, come join us for an evening and share your wealth of knowledge. So the sharing tonight, it will be no exception. Let me take care of the opening announcements necessary. Tonight's Small Business Conversation, as with all of them, is being recorded. You will find it available somewhere later tonight on the profitsplus.org website as an MP4 file, so you can simply click and listen, or you can download it if you still use one of those little personal listening devices like whatever they were called back then. Small Business Conversations is available on just about every podcast service out there. They include Amazon Music, Anchor, Apple Podcast, Breaker, CastBox, Castro, Google Play, iHeartRadio, iVox, Listen Notes, Overcast, Pandora, Pocket Cast, Podbean, Radio Public, Spotify, Verbal, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, and anytime you want to go talk to your little smart speaker there and just tell what you want to hear, Small Business Conversations with Tom Shea, and it should just start playing in a heartbeat and giving you the most recent episode. So what are we going to talk about tonight? You have a business. You opened the business or you bought the business, hopefully because you looked at numbers. Hopefully you did a lot of research as to the appropriateness for the business. But also, somewhere in there, there was a hunch, your gut feeling, and it said, do this. And so you've done it, and here you are. But for many businesses, the gut feeling, for some unknown reason, gets put away in a box, put on a shelf, never to be looked at or heard from again because it got us to where we wanted, get us started in business. But I'm here to say that that's the wrong thing to do. The gut feeling does not belong in a box, does not need to sit somewhere on a shelf deep inside you. It needs to be out there, wide in the open, and watching, hearing, and seeing everything that's going on around you. Because there are things that come along in the life of a business. I testify that for having been the fourth generation of our family to have owned a business. There are things that come along. My great-grandfather's business in 1924 started on a hunch. He worked for a man who had a little, you might call it a corner grocery, you might call it one of the original convenience stores. And as he worked for the man, he said, gas pumps. You ought to put in gas pumps. Cars are hanging on here, and we could make more money if we were to take and have gas pumps out front. A car would drive up. There's no air conditioning, so they're going to jump out of the car. They're going to come inside. We're going to sell them a cold drink, sell them some other merchandise, and one of us is going outside to service the car. You know how they used to do it when they wash your windows and check the oil and all the other fluids in your vehicle? And the man who owned the business said no. So that gut feeling kicked in, and in secret, my great-grandfather bought the piece of land literally across the street, but continued to work for the man. Because as the next generation of my family would tell me, the money was necessary to keep the family fed. Until one day he went in and told the man, I'm leaving, here's my couple of weeks' notice. And the gentleman asked, where are you going? And he says, well, that building you've been watching going up across the street, it's going to say G.W. Brown's 3-in-1, groceries, convenience, and gasoline. And that was this little tiny place, of which the second floor was the family residence. But over the years, it grew and grew. It grew to the point that this little tiny place with a house on top occupied an entire city block. Because the generations before me were hearing ideas and looking for ideas and thinking about this might work. Were they all success stories? No, there are some failures in there. There were a bunch of failures. And that personal story from my family is the subject of tonight's discussion. Our guest tonight is a gentleman by the name of Jacob Curtis. Jacob is a CPA. That's Certified Public Accountant. He also owns a retail operation. And his niche is helping people who are independents, so that's us tonight, piece together financial freedom by taking on the day-to-day bookkeeping and payroll and taxes and providing strategic assistance and planning for business owners. Their website is CurtisAccountingSolutions.com, and you can find plenty of information from them there. But where we found him is that we have a friend who has a magazine called Creative Retailer, and she finds some of the best writers out there who have unique stories to tell, and this is one of them. So we went looking for Jacob Curtis, and we read this magazine thoroughly because it was titled Opportunity or Trap. What we want to do is talk about that tonight. As you are looking out there, are you paying attention to look for the opportunities? But as you begin to size them up, is that an opportunity or is it a trap? And we really should be making a decision in a positive standpoint as compared to, well, I don't know. There's an old expression, not to decide is to decide. And it kind of leaves you a hollow feeling in you. So with all that bit said, I welcome tonight my friend Jacob Curtis. Jacob, you there?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that warm welcome.
I appreciate you being here. Glad that you could join us. And yes, the like you look online, Creative Retailers, the magazine, it's definitely worth the dollars to subscribe to it because they have really nice articles. I will continually say every month I find 2 and 3 articles dealing with business management, and they make sense, and they prod you to think more. So, Jacob, you wrote this article, Opportunity or Trap. Give us the synopsis of the article.
Yeah, so the synopsis is that as business owners, we have a lot of opportunities that come through and we think of, especially if you are more entrepreneurially minded, it seems like we have an idea a minute almost. And the idea is to decide which of these ideas and opportunities come are truly opportunities or if they're actually a trap that suck us away from what our true mission and vision for our business is. And sometimes that kind of is blurry depending on where you're at. And I just kind of developed a process to help us decide and clear up any fog that could be there to decide if it really is an opportunity or if it really is a trap.
And there are lots of opportunities. I will share one that I have noticed recently. I ask people that if you're running your business today in the same manner that you ran it in 2019, you're missing a whole lot of opportunities. Because whether you are product or service, brick and mortar or online, the customer has changed a whole lot. An example, probably one of the simplest ones. Many of us in product and service businesses in a community, people can pay us with cash. They can pay us with a Visa or a MasterCard. They can pay us with a Discover card. And some of us still have that hesitancy to accept the American Express card. We just it doesn't pay in the same format that the other ones do, and I see a lot of stores who just know they don't want to deal with it. But in looking at what's changed, I'll point out to you that if you go to a fast food place, starting with, say, McDonald's, they have a sticker on their front window, and it says, here's the forms of payment we take. I counted 13. 13 different forms of payment. So in looking at opportunities and traps that Jacob's going to share with us, there's one right there in your face when you walk into a McDonald's. I can buy a hamburger and fries and a drink, and I got all kinds of choices. And when I go to a business like ours, I'm limited. Are we missing customers because of that? So, Jacob, let's take your process. Let's start at the beginning. I'm looking at a business. I'm thinking about adding something, whether it's a product or service. What would you say are the signs? Is it because it's something I like that I should add it? Is it because I have a customer who's always telling me this is what I should do in my business? Is it something I read in a magazine? Is it a hunch? Help us to explain to people tonight the idea of just the very first itching or the niche, the nudge that you get to go, should I actually investigate this further? How would you tell them to do it?
Yeah, so usually what that happens is, in my experience, it's usually a customer that has come into the store or has emailed or called and said, I wish you did XYZ or offered this service or that product. And so we think about it for a while, and then maybe a week later or a little bit later, we have a second customer that kind of says the similar or same thing. And it also could be that you are noticing that you have a missing product or service that you're trying to offer, and you're thinking, how can I better serve my customers? Those are usually the most common ways that come through. Is we either get a comment from a customer, or as we're looking and trying to find better ways to serve and help our customers, we come across a product or service that we think that would be beneficial for. I think that's probably some of the most common ways that we come up with these to evaluate and figure out if these ideas are really valid or where they're going to take us.
So in doing this, there's a little nudge in the head, and we're not going to sit here and just lay on it. We're going to make a decision, and it's not going to be as simple as take a quarter and flip it, heads I do, tails I don't. You're going to tell us there's got to be more to it to making this decision.
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's a lot more to it, right? So the big overview is you've got to think about that. And one of the best exercises that I've had that I start with is really thinking about what your vision or your mission is for your business, for your company. You've got to start with why, as Simon Sinek says. And think about, well, I started this business for a reason. What was that reason? Write it down. I feel like if you write it down, you have a visual reminder of what it is that you've started for. And then think back, okay, and if that's my ultimate goal, so that when I am at my funeral and people are talking about me, they're going to be referencing what my mission was in the business. And then the next step is to kind of zoom in a little bit on your 10-year goal. What is your goal for the next 10 years to help fulfill that mission? And then write down who you're currently serving with your products and services, and who you're selling to, and what you actually are providing them. And then as you evaluate the opportunity that you're trying to decide if you're going to do it or not, that's when you sit down and say, well, how is that going to impact my 10-year goal and my vision? But also, how's it going to impact the next 10 minutes, 10 months, and the next 10 years? Is that going to drive me towards where I ultimately want to be, or is that going to distract from what we're doing and where I actually want to end up? And that is, in essence, the questions that we need to ask ourselves. Once you get past that, there's a lot more analysis you could do as an accountant, as a finance guy. There's a whole bunch of things you could do, but that's the initial questions we should be asking ourselves.
Okay, so let's take them a piece at a time. Let's go looking at, as you described, the mission. When I write my mission, is this going to be something that, well, I guess the first thing is, am I going to actually write it, or is this a thought that's going to be sitting in my head?
You will actually write it. I find that having it written down so you can visually see it day after day is a good reminder of where you're headed and what you're working towards and why. I always say that my mission statements are very simple, basically stating what you do and why you do it. It's one or two sentences. If you get any longer than that, then they get complicated and convoluted. And honestly, you and all your employees, if you have any, probably won't even remember what it is and what you're working for. So I like to say it needs to be short and sweet.
Okay. Now, as I have the mission statement and we've written it down, is it going to be something that I'm okay with other people seeing? I mean, I'm thinking I have to decision. Is it make a decision of, is this just something for me, or is this something that I want my employees to see, or my family to see, or my customers to see? I would think those making that decision is going to greatly influence what the mission statement is going to look like.
Right, yes. And in fact, you do want to probably over-communicate your mission statement to yourself, to your family, to your employees, to your customers, to your vendors, to everybody. You want them to know why you're in business, why what it is that you're working towards, and because that will, one, attract the people who have the same goals and values and mission that you have, who are attracted to that kind of place. And I think that is really beneficial, because you'll find that you'll have happier employees, you'll have better relations with your customers and vendors, and things just seem to work out a little better. And you'll also recognize when somebody doesn't share that same mission, when they try to join the team or when they come in as a customer, you'll be able to recognize immediately that they're not quite fitting in. There are a few businesses that I know that in their lobbies, they have their mission statement right there on the wall. Ramsey Solutions here in Tennessee, where I'm at, they have their mission statement in the lobby. So anybody that comes and visits will see the mission statement. I think that's a pretty powerful idea to help one solidify what you're about, what you're doing, and it just attracts like-minded people to your business.
So I may have an idea in my head that says, I want to be able to leave this business at some point in time, and I want $1 million sitting in my investment account when I leave. It's not a part of the sentence that I want to take included in the mission. The mission is about something that, and it's not me. Am I correct?
Right. I would say so. If money is your sole goal of your business, you're not going to go very far. I've seen plenty of businesses that their whole goal is to just make money. And money is not the goal. Money is the result of pursuing a higher passion, a higher goal. And so while, yes, a lot of us go into business to pad up our retirement accounts, that is more of a side benefit of going into business for yourself rather than solely focusing on just the money. If you focus on a greater need, a greater part, you'll be able to attract those people. And that's been really beneficial for me as I've been able to share that, and I've seen other businesses do the same and experience similar results with that.
So by your definition, then, if you were listening when the voice kicked in and started the program, introduced it. It repeats our mission statement in there. We have ours everywhere, and the word that is most dominant in our mission statement is the word "your." We always see it from the perspective of the customer. Ours is increasing your profits plus building your business for the future. There's no us in our mission statement. Our mission statement is all you, whoever's listening to the program tonight, all about yours. So, as I understand from your definition, we've done okay on ours.
Oh yeah, I think so. I think that is mission statements are basically the foundation of the business. And you want them, because they guide you in what you're working towards and will help you answer the question, do I buy this new product? Do I offer this new service? Do I open this or offer this new product or service? Because you want to be in alignment with your ultimate goal. What is your ultimate mission for your business, and having that mission statement displayed and everywhere so that everybody can see what it is. Will help people understand why it is that you're doing what you're doing.
Okay, let me ask this question. I'm thinking about a business that I know I will be driving by tomorrow, and they have it painted in large letters on the side of their building, and they actually won a contest in our state and because of what they do. And they're on the side of the building, it says, "When all you do is serve hamburgers, you better be the best." Now, from your perspective, is that a mission statement or is that a slogan?
I think that's a slogan. And I say okay. that because a mission statement, to me, would define what you do and why you do it. In that slogan, it doesn't tell me really why they do it. Why do they serve burgers? And I think that's an important aspect and key part of building a mission statement is including the why. People need to understand why. Simon Sinek wrote a whole book titled Start With Why. And I think that is key to the rest of this process and to growing and scaling your business.
Okay. So now let's go to the second part that you added into it. And that was vision. Now, if I understand you correctly, what you are saying is that this is also going to be written, and the vision is, you first used the word, I believe, 10 years. Do I understand you correctly? You're telling me you're wanting me to write down where do I see the business being in 10 years. Am I correct on that one?
Yeah, so there's a couple of options we can look at, and this is probably why it gets a little confusing, but when I say vision, I typically mean the 50,000 foot view of the business over its full lifetime. And then we drop down into the 40,000 range, and that's our mission. And then the next step is really that 10-year goal. That's more of the 20,000 foot view of the business. Where do we want that business to be? What's our goal? That the business is going, what are the goals the business is going to achieve in 10 years? It is similar to a 10-year vision, because you're trying to, in your mind's eye, and write it out in story form. I found is very helpful in present day story form, and saying, my business does this. This is who it serves. This is how many customers we have. This is the amount of revenue we're doing. This is the floor size we have. This is the amount of sales per square foot. If you're if you're selling products and things, write that out and then describe your business and say, to give you an idea, something more concrete to hold on to. It's a longer form of your mission statement. It's what does fulfilling your mission actually look like in 10 years? You know, describe who your employees are and how they interact with your customers and how they interact with you and your vendors and even how they are performing and what they value in their lives and why they do that. I found that as you actually write down both your vision and mission and your 10 years and really understand where you want to go, to give that kind of a mental image, it helps you to get there and to think through, okay, if that's going to be where I'm at, what changes or what do I need to do today to get there? And is this current opportunity that is being presented that I think about, is that going to get me closer to that ultimate vision and mission and 10-year goal?
Does the vision have, so shall I say, adjectives, or does the vision have things in very exacting measurements? An example. We want to give, I see a business that we will be giving the best customer service out there, and we will have the finest selection of products, taking care of the customers in the area. Or is the vision statement going to be more of a, this is the dollar volume I expect to be this business to hit at whatever year mark that we select? And my second part of the question is going to be, we've used the word 10. Is there a 3-year vision? Is there a 5-year vision?
Yeah, good questions. I have found that the more specific and descriptive you can be, the better. If you can, it's kind of like taking a picture of the future. If you can write it down and be able to visualize exactly what that is, then you've written it well enough. So you'd want to describe what is the best customer service. Does that mean you're answering the phones in 2 minutes or 3 minutes or 5 minutes? Does that mean that you are getting things shipped out to customers in 24 hours or 3 business days? The more descriptive you can be in that, the better. And I use the 10-year goal just because that is far enough away that it's something to shoot for. It's something that is not yet a reality, but you know what you can do. There's this saying, I can't remember who said it, but basically it says that we underestimate what we can get done in a decade and overestimate what we can get done in a year. That's probably the same thing as we overestimate what we can get done in a month and we underestimate what we can get done in a year. And so I would recommend and highly recommend you that you are, as you're doing these evaluations and looking ahead at what the business is, that you do have a vision for all of those years, for all of those timelines and periods, because the whole idea is if you've written a good mission plan or a good mission and a good business plan, you know what metrics and what even non-number metrics you need to be able to hit as you reverse engineer your goals, right? If you've set a goal in 10 years to have $1 million in annual revenue, well, you know that in 5 years, you've got to have at least half that in annual revenue. And in 2.5 years, you've got to have 250,000 in annual revenue. And so there are some things that we want to double check against and make sure that we're hitting those milestones as we progress throughout those years. And so, yes, I think that you need to have both of those. You need to have both hard numbers, but you also need to be very descriptive of what is excellent customer service to you? What does the best customer service mean? How does that help you? How does that help your customers? And also, yeah, what is your revenue goal? What does that look, what does that mean for you? And do it 10 years is what I would recommend, because it's just far enough away that you still have time to make changes and adjust if you need to, but it's also close enough that it's not something that's very vague and far away. Most of us can remember a main event that happened 10 years ago, maybe even 20 years ago. So that's why I picked the 10, is because it's a pretty standard common middle ground between businesses. And usually if you're in business for yourself, or you're in business probably for close to 20 to 30 years. And so as we just kind of break that into the decades, that's where we want to, that was my whole goal, is using that 10-year goal. But yes, you do eventually want to actually go backwards even further and say, okay, from there, what's my 5-year? What's my 3-year? What's my 1 year? And even what's my quarterly and monthly goals?
Kind of like a runner. You gotta have, you got can't it. Just measure it at the end of the line. You gotta have incremental measurements to help you know at certain points you're getting there, or do I need to work faster, or am I on pace to hitting my goal?
Yeah, correct. There's a Stephen Covey in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, had a good illustration of what it means to be a leader in the business versus just a manager. And to summarize, he basically said that managers are down in the weeds, making sure that everybody is doing what they need to do. And leaders are up on, they see the big field, the overall big picture, and know where we're going. And they direct those managers and those people where they want to be. As business owners, as small business owners, we may not have the corporate structure that McDonald's has, or that Apple or Google have. But we do know that we have to wear often many of those different hats. We've got to be able to be the manager down in the field doing the work, but also we need to take that step back and remember to look at the big picture. Look at that 10-year goal. Look at that mission plan, that vision, and make sure that we're headed in the right direction.
So in doing this, what we're getting towards is that point of saying, here's something on the horizon that I see, or I've heard, the scenario that you described. And now I need to take and make a decision as to whether or not this is going to take my business where I want it to go, or is this to be a part of my business, or is it something that's totally out of left field, so to speak?
Right, exactly. That's exactly what we want to do, is once you've got those written down and you see them, in fact, I have my mission statement posted right on the wall next to me, and I see it every single day. I also have my goals that I'm working on for this quarter. Those help me stay aligned with what I want to do, because it helps me and reminds me of, okay, this is what I'm working towards, and this is why I'm working towards it. And when we are able to come up, when we get new opportunities or new ideas come, this and you know, what do I do? Does this align with my ultimate goal, with my end result? And that's the first question we need to ask ourselves, is does this match up and align with where I want to be in 10 years, or, you know, at the end of my when I retire? And I think we get lost in the day-to-day and putting out fires. As we get into crisis mode, for lack of a better word, we'll pretty much do anything it takes to bring in that other dollar, to bring in any kind of money, because any money that comes in will give us some short-term relief and out of that crisis. I work with a lot of businesses that every business needs to have cash. Cash is what keeps you alive. And so we'll pretty much do and try everything, depending on how desperate we get. The more desperate we get, the more things we'll try to bring in those dollars. Now, that's not to say you shouldn't evaluate your products and services. And if you see a shift in the winds, a shift in the trends, that you should adjust your business accordingly. What the whole goal here is to make sure that, one, you are looking up every once in a while. You take those blinders off and you look at the big picture and see where you make sure you're headed still in the right direction that you want to go. And I think that's one of the most important things you can do, is to evaluate those opportunities and say, okay, if I do this, how does that going to impact my business in the next 10 minutes, 10 months, and 10 years? Is this going to be something that we think will help? And it's most important to get that biggest impact in the 10-year impact. If you think that it is in line with your products and services and your mission and your customers and what they value and you value, then I would probably say do it. But the reason we want to also think about the 10 minutes is to figure out, well, what does that actually mean? I need to take some action on this. Often we get big ideas and want to do something, and we just sit on them and sit on them. And then a month goes by, and then 3 months goes by, and then a year goes by, and you think, oh, I should have done that. And so that's why we want to make sure we have an action plan. What is it going to do in the next 10 minutes? What do I need to do to start that process if it's something that's going to align with my business? And that's what's really important, is how does this impact the business?
We've reached the bottom of the hour. Actually, we're past the bottom of the hour. We take our usual station break at this point. We have a little musical ditty we play called 88 Keys, and the backside humor is because it's played on piano and it's 88 seconds long. So everybody, if you just sit tight, our guest tonight is Jacob Curtis. Jacob is the CPA, and his business firm, located in Columbia, Tennessee, is CurtisAccountingSolutions.com. Stay tight, we'll be right here. Well, 88 seconds is over. We go back. We're visiting with Jacob Curtis, CPA, who is coming to us from Columbia, Tennessee. We are discussing an article that he wrote, appeared in a creative retailer magazine called Opportunity or Trap. And the essence where we have gone in the first half of our program is discussing creating things such as a mission statement and a vision statement so I can see if I'm on track to where I think my business should go. And as Jacob has explained, I use this as a guideline to decide, is this opportunity out there going really in the direction of where it should go? So before we get into the numbers, the hard part of this making this decision, Jacob, let me throw a real-life example at you. A couple I know owns a business, been there many, many years. They're very unique. I've never seen another business like theirs, and they have some awesome customers. They have some very famous customers who buy from them, and some of the credits they get for stuff that they have done in their business shows up in little small lines in things like movie credits and things like that. But they have multiple components to their business as to what they produce and what they sell and events that they sell their products at. And at one point, we were conversing about all of it, and they said, we're not making the money we need to make. Okay, well, I didn't ask the question, but learning from you tonight, I would say, well, the question I missed to ask was just how much money are you expecting, and where are you, and how long, what was the timeline for this goal to be achieved? How long have you been working on this goal? So I could begin to determine, well, you know, you're looking for something to occur far too fast than it should, considering the limitations of your business, which for many of us is deals a lot with financial aspects. But they knew that there was a part, or they say they know, there's a part of their business that's not helping, and it's probably consuming dollars, it's consuming space, it's consuming time, and it's probably eating up some of the space in their brain as they are sweating the idea like, oh, this isn't working, it's not doing. I made the comment earlier about not to decide is to decide, and that describes them exactly. They haven't made the decision. It's still there. We haven't stayed in close touch, but this issue that they had, they've not stayed in close touch with it to with me to say, we know what the problem is. We figured it out, which I'd love to know. Well, how did you figure it out? I'm going to guess you've seen businesses like that through your practice. They've perhaps wandered off target. They've added something to it. But past the mission statement, vision statement, there's numbers on a piece of paper, and the numbers aren't being what they want them to be. So if this couple were to contact Jacob Curtis and ask the question and give that scenario as I just described to you, tell us what you start saying to them.
Yeah, so the first thing I would ask is, well, what is your mission, vision, plan? What are your goals? I would want those concrete, hard numbers, because that is something that we're working towards. We need to know what that timeline is. What was their overall plan to get there? Because you never want to start a big project, and the more expensive that project is, the more expensive it is to bring on or bring in a new product or offering or service, the more planning that needs to be into it on the front end. We need to be able to plan that out and set milestones so that we know if we're going to hit those. Now, these milestones need to be something you can actually measure. They need to be something that you can track. Often, what I've discovered is people say, oh, I want to bring in or do X, Y, Z, and yet they never set those milestones. How do you know if it's working if you can't track anything from it? How do you know if you're getting a good return on that investment? And so part of once you've made that decision, you've run through this analysis, you know that this new product or service is in line with your vision and what your 10-year goals are. Now we need to sit down and actually do the numbers. We need to do the math and say, okay, this is what we're expecting it to be. This is the milestone we need to hit in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, and a year. And if it's a bigger project, maybe even longer. And each of that's going to look a little bit different in each of their scenarios. So in this case, I would ask those questions. Well, what was your goal? What was your, even what was your budget, even your monthly budget to fund or to allow this aspect of the business to continue? And we'd talk through what those ratios look like. We'd work with them and assuming I had access to all the information that I needed to run some calculations, we would figure out what their product mix was and what percentages of the business were attributed to each product or service that they offer. And look at those returns and see what those are. If they're offering a physical product like inventory, we would look at each product category's inventory turnover ratio to make sure that inventory is turning over at an acceptable rate. We'd look at if it's a floor space that they're looking at. If it takes up a lot of floor space, then that dollar per square foot sales per square foot needs to be higher for that category of inventory. If it's a service, you need to look at it and see, typically in services, it's time for money. You know, you're offering somebody else's time to provide a service to you. And so we want to look at that ratio and see what those have been, what they've been historically. Do a financial analysis on those specific products to make sure that it is in line with your other products and services that you're offering and that it's bringing in what you think it is. Often we'll find products and services that we really love to do and like to do, but they don't bring in the same amount of revenue or don't have the same ratios that other products and services have.
So if I'm going to end my business and I say, I want to look at this, I think I could add this. Are you going to coach me to say, let's go back and look at your checking account, let's look at your balance sheet, and let's see how much money you can afford to lose so that if this thing all goes south on you, it's like, okay, it failed. This is how much I could afford to lose. Are we going to look at it from the ugly side? This could be what would happen, and I need to be prepared for that before I even begin to count of how much space it might take or what else I could do with that space if I were a business elsewhere. Is that your thought?
Yes, that's exactly my thought. We want to make sure that we set up those milestones so that if we get to one of those time frames and we haven't reached the goal that we thought we had, that's an inflection point. That's when we decide, do we cut ties and chalk this up to a it didn't work out kind of an effort, and it's a sunk cost and all the opportunity and everything we've put into it, all the hard money and time and labor we've put into it, is it gone or what was the reasoning behind it? But yeah, we do want to make sure on the flip side that we have a set budget for that, so that if it does come up to be a big flop, it doesn't work out like we think it's going to, we have a hard pullout. We have a hard stop right there that says we're not going to go any further. We're not going to lose any more money on this. And maybe we'll reevaluate it. But you really want to, if you're continuing to spend money to develop that product or service, to really put the brakes on that as fast as possible. If you're not hitting those goals and those metrics, those milestones that you originally set up in those timeframes that you have. Now, some products and services will take months to develop, and that's just a known factor. If you're, you know, trying to get something improved, you give yourself time to get it done. It's not going to just be a week long typically. You've got to allow the business to and yourself to actually learn how that product or service works, how it sells, what customers think of it. And that brings up a really good point. One of the best opportunities or best things that I have seen businesses do is they will contact their top customers and say, I'm thinking of offering XYZ. Would you be interested in this? Now, when I say top customers, what I mean by that are those that appreciate you with and give you pieces of papers with president's faces on them. They pay you. Because everybody will say they'll buy XYZ, but until they put the money where their mouth is, we can't really trust them. In accounting, we have an old saying that says trust, but verify. And that's part of the verification process. You can trust what they say, but make sure you have a budget for how much you're going to invest in this new product or offering before, so that you have a way to pull out, so you don't lose lots and lots of money. So you don't get down 10 years down the road and realize it's not where you're performing. You do the analysis and it's not where you wanted it to be. We want to have that done well before you get to that point. And again, it's going to be different in each kind of business, what that dollar amount is. Every business is in a different stage, different size, different location. And so we have to take all of those factors into account. What is the best case scenario and what is the worst case scenario? When do we keep going and when do we pull the plug?
When you're doing this, do you find that if you can sit down a business owner and you help them perform the calculations, and let's take it as a very small business, and we come up with a number and say, then our hard stop here is where we've spent $5,000. Are you as an owner prepared to lose $5,000 here? Do you find people have a hard time hearing that and thinking about it logically as to just there's a potential to make a lot of money, but you're telling me, am I prepared to lose $5,000? Do you find that's a mental roadblock with folks?
I do, actually. There is in most of my customers are independent fabric retailers, and they are generally a little more conservative and not big risk takers. So the bigger the risk taker, the more willing they are to have that hard stop in that $5,000. I also know that you have to have some kind of you have to take a risk. If you don't take the risk, you'll never know if it's going to work or not, right? But generally, in my experience with the people that I've worked with, once they take that emotion out of it, because it's such a cool and exciting new thing, once they step back and start using the other side of their brain and thinking analytically and logically about it and thinking about, okay, if I did invest $5,000, is that something I could live with? And that's really where it comes back to making sure that you have good, sound cash management practices in the business to make sure that you do have that money set aside. Often what I'll coach my clients to do is to save that money and put it aside and don't touch it. If you don't need to touch that money for 3 months, then go ahead and let's execute upon that plan. And you have the money set aside to go ahead and do that. I don't recommend if it's a very high risk kind of a situation to borrow money for it. I just simply don't think that it is worth the risk, because if you take the risk and it doesn't work out, the bank is still going to call you and say, hey, where's my money? And so I would avoid that. And it does take some preparation to save for it, especially if it's a bigger risk or a bigger amount to the business. It's a bigger percentage of the profits and revenues. But I think that is key to really understand and step back and think, is this something that I can work towards? Or how do I get that, right? How can I make losing that $5,000 not feel so hard or so rough? It's money that you've already got spent. And I think part of that is just having a solid cash flow management system in your business.
And while we talk about small businesses, I mean, we're in the realm of micro businesses. We're not the only ones. Let me share with everyone listening a story that occurred. Years ago, there was a couple of guys who had this new concept about how people would watch movies at home. And it wasn't going the way they wanted it to go. And they were ready to call it stop. That's it, we're through. And they went to another company that was doing pretty dadgum good and had plenty of locations. Big business. Everyone, when I tell you in a moment, you go, oh, yeah, of course I know who they are. And they went in and sat down with the people and said, we're going to quit. We want to sell out to you. How about you buy us as to who we are and what we are, and it's yours, and we'll walk away. And the people said, well, how much money do you want? And the two men said, what we have invested in our business at this point is $50 million. $50 million. And all they wanted was the money back that they put in. They wanted the money out. And the gentleman said, as we were in the room and we were with these people and made our proposals as to how we would like to sell to them, he said they didn't actually do it, but he says you could kind of see it in the smile and you could kind of see it in their eyes and their face. They were laughing at us. They were laughing at us as to, like, would you really think you would that we would buy you? Come on. The story is true, and we look at the two businesses today. The business that was doing the laughing and would not purchase them was a company called Blockbuster. And the two men sitting on the other side of the table were the two guys who came up with this concept called Netflix. And at a point in time, you could have bought Netflix in its entirety for $50 million. I checked the numbers this afternoon. If you want to buy Netflix as in entirety, you need $194 billion. What a story.
Amazing. Yeah.
It's not just us and little ones, but to look at what Jacob is telling us tonight is, you know, we do have to look at this very logically. How about Jacob? Of course, not naming names and all the particulars, but you've had businesses that have gone blinded, willy-nilly into it because I know this will work. My friends will buy from me. They've all told me this will work, on and on like that. And they don't do the homework that you're talking about doing. And what happens?
Yeah, I am actually working with a client right now. They bought an existing business for a little over $100,000, and they jumped in the deep end. And they've never owned a business like this before. They've owned a couple of different businesses, but nothing like this. And it's been a year since I've been working with them, and I'll tell you, they struggled. They're still struggling. It's taken a lot of hard work. They've probably reinvested in the business on their own education and on their own mistakes, probably twice what they paid for the business originally. But it does, it's that important, that they are able to turn around and actually look at that. It's only within the last probably 6 months or so that they've seen that change in the business and seen it starting to grow and go in the direction that they actually want to. When they sat down and did that hard work of thinking about where they want the mission, where they want their business to go and their mission plan, and sitting down and actually doing a market analysis and figuring out who their customers were, did they actually start to turn the business around and doing that hard work and understanding the relationship between customers, products, and their vision and mission. So, yeah, it's very key to make sure you have that down. In fact, I would call that having your mission is a foundational to your business scaling and growing.
Would you say that the basis of the turnaround in the client that you're describing was learning, understanding, and utilizing discipline?
Oh, yes, yes. There's definitely been a lot of discipline. And I'm sure all of us have experienced this, but when you are in your business, there are so many different things and ideas that you want to do, and you want to go do this, and you want to go do that. But you have limited resources, limited time, limited money, limited people, limited resources. And so we have to be able to prioritize what we do. And helping us to prioritize what we do and where we spend our money is going to really be based on what the basis of your mission statement is. Where do you want to be? Where do you want to go? What are your goals you're trying to accomplish? And I think that's important, like I've been saying. Yeah, I think you would agree, Tom. Would you not? Do you have another idea or another example?
Well, my thought I was going to throw in at this point is to say, for a small business owner, the value of passion very often is overly exaggerated as to being the key to success.
Yeah, I would think so.
Point of, I want you to be passionate, but passion is never going to overcome the flaws that a small business owner makes, thinking that, well, I love this, I know this, I know how to do this. And it's like, in Tom's two cents, I don't care that you know how to sell. I really don't care that that's what you really love. I want you to take and have a good business sense. The example I will share with you on this one, Jacob, is a couple of sisters met them at a trade show once. And in visiting with the sisters, one of them was a Jacob. She's numbers. She gets it. Okay, I'm in the same camp. I'm a numbers person. And she was all about the numbers. The other sister, when you walked into the business and it was a retail operation, you could see her. You could see how beautiful she made it, how well merchandise was displayed. You walked in and there was a flair to it, and you could feel it. And the other side was, in Tom's observation, she was a little cocky about it. I'm what makes this business go. You know, I'm a success here. And as I was talking to the two sisters, I said to the ones, if we were to step outside on the street corner today and a car comes by and hits and kills one of you, for the future success of this business, because one of you will survive, the one who needs to die is the one who's got all the flair, who's got the touch, who's got the feel, who's got the passion. The one who gets the numbers and understands what takes numerically and has the logic, the first thing she'll realize after her sister's funeral is that she's got to find someone who's got the flair and the passion, and she'll hire that person. If you are the one who has the flair and the passion, maybe not so. To the extent, I was in Canada recently and I saw a TV ad and I go, oh my gosh, I remember this guy. Years ago, went to Canada, sitting in the cold hotel room one day, looked out the window and saw one of this man's locations. He had, I think, 15 stores. And I thought, well, I got to go see him because I'll see him in a few months at a trade show. Went in, had a wonderful experience, and the next time I see the owner at the trade show, I'm telling him, oh, great salesperson. He was so friendly, and I enjoyed shopping there and the stuff that he showed me and his knowledge of the products. He was a great asset. And the owner of the store, again, I think we were in Philadelphia at that time, says, yeah, he was my competitor. And I go, then it shows. He knows all the products. He knows how to sell. He knows this. But he couldn't be successful at a business. So what is he doing now? He's not being the owner he wanted to be. He's enjoying what he did. But he has the title of salesperson, not the title of owner. And he doesn't have the money that goes with it. That being said, folks, with our time, Jacob, that's the stories that I've experienced that stick in my head that go, passions, in some cases, gets a little overrated. You got to have the other side. No matter how passionate you are about business, folks, you got to hear what Jacob is saying and do the disciplining exercises that he is telling you about to keep you on track with where you need your guest tonight. His name is Jacob Curtis. He is a CPA who has been kind to visit with us. He is from Columbia, Tennessee. To find Jacob, two ways. One, I mentioned the magazine, Creative Retailer, that he writes for. And secondly, his website is CurtisAccountingSolutions.com. Jacob, we thank you. We appreciate that you were here tonight and would share with us. Appreciate you giving up an hour to share with people. Thanks for everything you've done for everyone tonight.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure. I enjoyed it immensely.
And we'll close with our favorite sound and let the announcer carry us on out. Thank you, buddy.
It has been our pleasure to share fresh ideas and trends from premier small business owners, coaches, and resources. Join Tom Shea and guests next month right here on Small Business Conversations from Profits Plus Solutions. This is PBN. The Profitable Business Network. Visit our website to learn more about us at profitsplus.org. There, you will find our catalog of small business conversations, articles and advisories, news, meeting planners, calculators, and resources. Also, we invite you to connect with Profits Plus Solutions on our various social media channels. Please like or connect with us on Facebook, LinkedIn, SlideShare, Twitter, and YouTube. We have links to all our social media channels on our homepage at profitsplus.org. Thank you for joining us.